Welcome to Waveframe.
Yeah, I'm ready.
Oh, welcome back, everybody. This is a Waveframe episode that we just spontaneously wanted to record. And it's our third, pretty sure it's our third, scene checkmark episode. By that, we mean we're just talking about whatever we want to talk about. Just like movies, music, TV shows. And I am Isaac.
I'm Luke. It's nice. It's just a check-in because we don't do too much of a deep dive, but... In different seasons, we have different amounts of content that we're engaging with, and we like to just chat about it because that's what we do normally anyway. And it is right now. We were just saying how this is a hefty season with lots of things like starting to release. Things are mid-release, so there's lots to talk about. So we're just gonna move through some of what we've been looking at recently and listening to, and just give our thoughts on it.
And our audio is gonna be just slightly different because Cole Hook. He didn't bring back his microphone stuff to Luke. So if you want to go badger him online, I wouldn't say you shouldn't do that. I'd say you could do that.
We're coming for you, Cole. We're unleashing our millions of followers
on yes. You. Watch out, dude. You're going to get doxxed. Anyway, we're talking about some fun stuff. I have a lot of it written down, but what I remember off the top of my head is... We've been meeting each week to watch House of the Dragon. Mm-hmm. And I know a little bit of your thoughts on this, but what do you think about Hot D?
Yeah, I think that this was a show that coming into it, you know, we've all been burned by Game of Thrones a little bit.
Yep.
And so everybody went into this thinking like, okay, is this going to be like good Game of Thrones or bad Game of Thrones or something totally different?
Yes.
And, you know, if I were to say if in one of those categories, if I were to put it good Game of Thrones, bad Game of Thrones, totally different, I think the closest category it falls in is good Game of Thrones to me. And it's got a very great production value. Some incredible performances all around, some of the great dialogue, that we loved from the original show. Not necessarily some of those peak moments that maybe stand out, but some great, you know, verbal sparring. We haven't seen a ton of maybe like large scale action yet, but it seems like from the trailer for episode 3, it's on the way. So I've been having a great time. Also, yeah, the fact that we've been able to get together and watch it with a group of friends, like that's what was so fun about the original.
Yes.
It was an incredibly quality show, but also it did have that social appeal and social draw. That's, you know, I was talking to my girlfriend about this, Camila, and she's joined us for one of the episodes.
Yeah, she
and
did.
She had not seen any Game of Thrones, and we were joking around, but, you know, it's almost like that social appeal that The Bachelor and The Bachelorette give, in a way for some people. Like, there is that dudes. That draws you in, So I've had a really fun time watching it. I'm really excited to see where it goes and develops, and you can tell it's building. It is like giving you a little bit of that slow burn for hopefully some big payoff. So I've been really having a great time with it.
Well, I want to be clear. We've only seen 2 episodes so far. Mm-hmm. And so the third one's coming out tomorrow as of recording. So I think I have a really good feeling about it. Episode 1, I think, really got everybody back on the side of liking Game of Thrones. And then the second episode did something interesting where it brought back an intro and kept the same theme song, mm-hmm. which I feel like thematically says, hey, this is still Game of Thrones. It's just 200 years before. It's just, you know, you don't have to wait for the dragons. They're right here. They're right here, baby. I feel like it did what Game of Thrones did pretty well and put some... faces we recognize, like Ned Stark is played by Sean Bean, and we pretty much all know this Doctor Who guy, Matt Smith, and he's been in a bunch of stuff, including Morbius.
Yeah. His biggest accomplishment.
He was so good in Morbius. We actually saw that in theaters. We thought about doing an episode for it, but we kept that memory just for us. He's recognizable and he's amazing. Mm-hmm. But there's also a bunch of other character actors, and a few of them you're like, where have I seen you before? oh, you were the lizard in Amazing Spider-Man and technically No Way Home.
And Patty Jenkins, who plays King Viserys. Viserys. King Viser. He is in the music video for Coldplay's God Put a Smile on Your Face. I saw that they posted something about that.
That's fun.
If you recognize him, it's like, oh, sure enough.
He's a great actor. He's been in some of my favorite stuff. He was in The World's End, which is the Edgar Wright movie. And like, I've been really impressed with the young female person actor who is playing, what, Rhaenyra?
Yeah.
Is that how you say her name? I think she does a really good job. And I'm almost a little sad that they're going to age her up because she's so great.
Yeah, they're going to swap out some of the actors and actresses as time progresses in the show. Yeah. And yeah, I'm like, man, one, she's leaving big shoes to fill in a way. But also like, I wonder if that will affect our attachment to the characters over time.
And will it feel like the same character? I have no idea. And this could be dated the second we put this out because I don't think they're going to age her up Sunday or like tomorrow.
I don't think so. Who knows?
But within a week or so, people could be like, oh my gosh, she's amazing. Feels like the same character. No doubt about it, dude. But yeah, any hot D predictions?
Hot D predictions? Honestly, I was trying to think about this and I've seen people riffing off of some things, but I've been trying to stay away from those conversations because inevitably I'm worried about seeing a book spoiler because this is based off of source material.
Yeah.
So, you know, I do not have any long-term predictions that I feel like I've really latched onto at this point. Have you thought of any?
I have really lame predictions, like I think that Patty Constantine's character is going to die. But that's, like, inevitable.
Yeah, that checks out.
Because he's got weird stuff on his back and his cut on his finger is not doing so
and
well.
And lots of people hate him.
I was on the phone with an AT&T representative who was trying to set up my Wi-Fi, and he said that he thought that Rhaenyra and Uncle Daemon are going to get married.
Yeah, that would be a big something.
That would be insane. And he said he doesn't read any fantasy books, so I don't think he read the book. So I don't think that's a spoiler. But yeah, I think there's a lot of twists and turns that could happen. I really like the character, and I don't know his name, who wanted him to marry his daughter, and who was like the sea captain.
His cousin.
Yeah, he's a good character.
He is good.
And I'm excited to see how this alliance, potentially, between Daemon and this guy who has the nice white dreads, how that works out. And, you know, you would think that Daenerys Targaryen, that she would have more inspiration if Rhaenyra ended up on the throne. But it seems like, because we've seen Game of Thrones, she might not. Because, like, it seems super unprecedented in Game of Thrones. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah. I don't remember them talking about there being as much of a deal of like, oh, a woman on the throne, what? In Game of Thrones?
Well, I'm watching season one right now with my wife, and they are like all worried about the fact that she might have a boy son because she's pregnant, Daenerys. And so, I don't know, I think that's like a thing that everybody assumes, that she's not going to be on the throne.
Okay, that's a good point.
But
see how it plays out.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. Well, overall, Hot D, we like it a lot.
We like Hot D.
And I think the production value of season one of Game of Thrones obviously has a lower budget, and yet it feels like you can reach out and touch it a little bit more, which I like. And I understand that it's probably cheaper to do a lot of, like, I don't know if it's CGI or visual effects or whatever, but I do think that House of the Dragon looks really great a lot of times, but it feels like it's less in real locations and real sets. So I'm hoping for more of that.
Yeah.
What do you think? Do you feel like you like the look of House of the Dragon?
Yeah, I do. It's a bit more glorious, which I think is nice, because Game of Thrones put you in a world that was just very dirty in a lot of ways, and it's kind of nice to see, and that goes along with, I think, you know, the Seven Kingdoms were doing better at this point.
Oh, totally.
So I think it's nice to
economy see. Economy was high.
Yeah, economy was booming. And so I think it's nice to see that and get some more pictures of, like, the glory of what it could be.
Definitely. And, like, everybody's got an overly embroidered vest on and things like that. And you're like, wow, everybody's rich. That's nice. Yeah. So House of the Dragon, a recommendation from us. We think you should watch it with a bunch of your friends. It's fun to watch. And I think it's going to be good. We'll see how it ends, though. And then we'll see if they're like going to have a cliffhanger for season two, which I think they probably will. Or if they're like, no, this is just one season. They would not do that, right?
I'd be surprised, yeah. But yeah, we'll see.
We will see.
Well, and speaking of shows that are predecessors, yes. And one that did not have the same title sequence, but in the second episode, which you have not seen yet, but Rings of Power just released. Yes. So that is the Lord of the Rings predecessor, covering the second age of Middle Earth. Yes. So that has been long awaited, controversial, because that's a very untouchable standard in a lot of ways. So it's bold to come into that and try to do something new, especially, you know, Amazon, maybe people have skepticism over the integrity of what they're doing and such. But also we know from seeing The Boys and Invincible, they've put out some incredible shows.
Oh, my word, yeah.
So, you know,
superhero shows.
Yeah, honestly. So it's been, I have really enjoyed the first episodes. We were chatting about this a bit. And, you know, again, this is one that kind of went into a bit detached and, you know, especially the experience of being a Star Wars fan in the last 10 years has really, I think, helped me be able to maybe be more detached to things and care about them in a way that I still am passionate, but also can hold them loosely.
Yeah.
And with that approach, you know, I'm having a great time with The Rings of Power. It looks gorgeous. Love the look of the show, even though it is different, as we talked about. I think that it's got some high potential to be a very engaging show. They're not trying to do too much, it seems like. Right now, it seems pretty self-contained for the most part at this point, and tying into the overall narrative just the right amount. So I've been very pleased with the first two episodes.
I liked the first episode. I haven't seen the second episode yet. I think overall, I really agree with you. I feel like I kind of... It's literally thousands of years, and the characters that we knew in Lord of the Rings, Elrond and Galadriel, they are elves, so I can suspend my disbelief for a while with that. And I know that Elrond doesn't really look necessarily like
Hugo Weaving,
yeah. But I'm totally fine with that for some reason. I'm just like, whatever, it's a TV show that happened 2,000 years ago. And I feel like I want to ask you more about specific storylines, like which one are you most excited about? Because I felt to myself, like, oh no, is this going to be a show where I'm really invested in one set of characters and I'm like, I don't want to watch these Irish hobbits or something like that. But also I liked the hobbits and I thought I was going to dislike them. I thought they had a lot of character and they were good. And that moment we said earlier off air was really good, where the wolf... They saw the paw print and they saw the danger nearby, and yet we didn't see a wolf attack in the first episode. So it feels like they're going to do a good job of balancing characters, but how do you feel? Like, for example, we're talking about the hobbits. What do you think about the hobbits?
Yeah, I think that I too was worried about that at first, and especially when it moved and it showed the segue from like these hunters with their big antlers on them and stuff. I'm like, okay, where are we going here? Because a big part, you know, I love the races of men in the original Lord of the Rings trilogy. I like, you feel way more drawn to than mostly the elves feel very ethereal, detached, like culturally at least.
Especially in the movies.
Yeah, and like Rohan is like, has its gorgeous, and Gondor is gorgeous in different ways. And in this, it's all focused on the elves and the dwarves, it's going to seem like, because men aren't up to much at this point besides farming and villages.
And hunting.
Yeah, that's you see the hunters cottages. Get by. So, cottages. I think that I was worried about that, but as the episode went on, and I do have the ability to say this coming out of episode 2 as well, there is not a storyline that when it switches to it, I'm like, ugh.
Really?
Yeah, and that's awesome. I mean, to compare it to Game of Thrones, which we talked about earlier, there were, especially at the end of Game of Thrones, it was like, oh my gosh, we have 2 episodes to go and you're spending half the episode on this storyline? Yes. Are you kidding me?
Yes.
And we're definitely
Looking not at you, there. Sansa. Yeah.
Looking at you, Sam and Gilly.
Looking at you, Theon Greyjoy.
every time there's a switch, and they each bring different things to the table, and they've established these different characters with, you know, Galadriel is this more action-driven character, and Elrond is this, you know, more intellectually political guy ambassador.
He's a homebody.
Yeah, and so you get to see these different characters, different insights into them. So I'm really excited to pursue all of these trails, and characters are really winning me over. It's fun. There is a healer in one of the human villages.
Does he use King's foil?
Is this all episode two? Yeah, no, I feel like you met her.
No, I didn't.
No, it's this. So it's this healer, and she's in these villages in the south where there are these elves that are on patrol.
I met the healer. I didn't realize she was a healer because I just kind of wasn't paying that much attention. Yeah.
And she is played by an actress who plays the character of Nora in How I Met Your Mother, who was a love interest of Barney for a while. Yeah. And it was really, I was like, how do I know this person? So that was really fun to see that. And I think she's doing a great job. So lots of good actors, lots of ways that I think this can be a really entertaining and a show with integrity. So I'm excited.
Yeah. Her storyline with the elf soldier guy, pointy boot. I thought, I was like, oh, is this going to be cliched? And then I was like, oh, I like this. Yeah. I think it's good. And they ended in that scene where they're looking at the town burning after episode one. And so, like, there's a few things that I really like. I like that they're bringing diversity into the Lord of the Rings universe. I think that's great.
Have you seen the jokes about how, you know, so there are high elves and then there are dark elves as well?
Yeah.
Or dark elves. And it's because
I have not seen these memes.
In the lore, they come from a place where the light never shone on Miller. So it was like actually like a dark place. People joke about how the studio exists. You're like, dark elves, you say? And they get a black person to play the elf.
Yeah, anyway. I was making jokes because we had the subtitles on. And so then sometimes when the insignia of Sauron, when it zooms in on it, it goes like,
yeah.
And then in the subtitles and brackets, it's like black speech. And I'm like, Ebonics? So it's one of the horrible things about fantasy tropes and just like culture in general is that you have a few times where the evil person is like super pale and white, but a lot of times it's like black connotations, literally the color, like the actual color is like evil stuff. Like he turns a leaf over and it's all
black. One time when I tried to write a book as a kid, one of the times it was definitely just, you know, Lord of the Rings ripoff, as you do as a child.
You do, yeah.
And I think that I had like the servants of the bad guy were literally called like, I was imagining them just as, you know, regardless of race, just wearing like dark clothing and like being stealthy and spooky looking. But like they were literally called like the black men in my book. Like looking back, I'm like, yeah, okay.
This is so bad. So regardless, we're trying to say that it's really nice to see some diversity in your Lord of the Rings. And like a lot of people would probably be prone to say, how can you improve upon the Lord of the Rings that Peter Jackson did? Well, this is one definitive way where you can improve upon the Lord of the Rings universe. Also super controversial, but like the fact that, what do you think about elves having like negative sideburns? like was it that prominent in the original series? Did they not have any sideburns whatsoever?
You know, I don't remember that specifically.
Distracting to you?
No.
What did you think about it?
I did not notice that at all. Really? To be honest.
It felt like they just, like, I don't know. It made me feel weird things.
Well, they're not supposed to have beards or facial hair, so like, it checks out.
Yeah. Cool. Well, we like Rings of Power. Yeah. You liked both episodes. I liked the first episode. Just kind of try to keep an open mind about it if you can. If you hate it, that's fine too. That's okay.
Teach their own.
Yeah. But we're excited. We'll see how that ends too. I feel like that's a thing that is a a hinge that I like waiting my opinion for. How is House of the Dragon going to end? And how is Rings of Power going to end? Because that'll affect my view on the whole season.
And don't name your child after any of the characters until they end.
Don't do it.
On a different note, shows that we've been watching, Harley Quinn has been being released over the past few weeks.
It's a great show.
And that is a comedy, very short. It's animated. And it is just this, comedic show about, this is the third season. It starts as originally Harley Quinn is kind of breaking up with the Joker from this toxic relationship and setting out on her own. And it has a great cast of characters, very comedic. How do you think that the third season has been landing so far?
I think it's good, but not great. I think it's fine. I think it's like watchable and enjoyable. But I don't know if it's me or the show. Like, maybe I have a different like thought process when it comes to comedy now. I have no idea what I'm saying. What I'm trying to say is I don't think that it's as good as season two. And I haven't watched the latest episode of Harley Quinn. But I feel like there's not really a narrative drive that's hooking me into it. I feel like I'm not super invested in Poison Ivy's trajectory. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I've been wondering about that. And I do think, looking back, I rewatched the first two seasons in preparation for this. And I do think that some of the arcs are played out as very slow burns over the whole season.
Yeah.
But I do wonder if there's trying to do a little bit too much with this one. Like, there's Gordon running for mayor. There's the Joker adapting to the suburban dad life. There's
Joker's been part of the best part of this.
There's Harley and Ivy's relationship. And it has felt like we've gone into so many different sectors that it is like, wait, what is grounding us right here? The latest episode I thought was fun. It has a bit more on, you know, it's... The show as a whole is a bit meta sometimes. It pokes fun at itself. It pokes fun at the Batman tropes.
In the best way.
Yeah, and this latest one definitely does it in a very fun way that I think you'll appreciate and enjoy. So I've been really enjoying it. I look forward to it every week. But I do wonder, you know, looking back on it, how will it compare to the other seasons? Especially season one was just so incredible. And maybe not, but that's okay.
Well, I always look forward to watching it, and I do watch it, but I sometimes enjoy the side characters more than I do Harley and Poison Ivy. And I wonder to myself, was Harley always annoying, or is she just annoying in this? Sometimes she's not annoying, but when she's bored and doesn't know what to do, she can get kind of annoying. And usually she's not in that state very long, but I've noticed that's been something that has been a part of this season.
Well, that is kind of the point of her character, is that is being held up as like a toxic thing about her.
Yeah, I know. But like,
you're just like,
her
actually,
voice is just like high pitched, and like,
I haven't had that issue a lot yet so far.
I guess I don't know. Sometimes I'm watching it with my windows open, and I'm like, oh, are my neighbors annoyed by this Harley Quinn screaming? But I really like all the Bat Family stuff. That's very so fun to actually have Batman go through emotions. Is great.
Very fun. There's a lot of that this season. Yeah. And this next episode dives into that.
And as I'm thinking about it, I think one of the things I really miss about season one and season two is the team dynamic that they had. I really miss that Mindbender dude who was played by the guy who voices Forky. he's also one of the brothers in Arrested Development, the one who has no hand. He has a hook for a hand.
Well, good news is he is back for this next
Are
episode.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Good.
Dr. Psycho.
I miss Dr. Psycho. And I miss their team dynamic. Oh, yeah, that's another thing. That Shark, King Shark, has to go back. And, like, it's kind of amusing, but it's also, like, the band's breaking up.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a little sad about that.
I do wonder if this will be the last season.
Yeah.
If they're realizing they're kind of losing their cohesiveness of the show, and they're kind of grabbing for scraps here a little bit.
Perhaps. We'll see. I still like it. We'll see how it ends.
Yeah.
Swamp Thing was really fun.
Very good.
So
great
fun.
Episode. Mrs. Freeze. Very good.
Yeah, Mrs. Freeze. Yeah, definitely. Cool, yeah.
Yeah. I think that's most of the stuff that I've been watching.
Oh, you've been watching She-Hulk.
Oh, come on. I don't want to talk about that. It's just...
I'm going to force you to talk about it.
I've been watching it because I will watch Marvel. Because
I don't want
to
talk.
Just to be culturally relevant, you need to, and it's stupid. And it's very cringy. There are some good moments where you're like, oh, this is kind of nice. I'm enjoying this. Abomination, for example.
Yeah.
Enjoying him.
Yeah.
Everything else, and sometimes you're just like, okay, that was so gooby, I'm just gonna laugh. But then it's just like, is this show taking itself seriously or not? I can't tell.
Yeah.
If it is, that's sad. And if it's not, then be more blatant about it. The CGI, especially, just watched episode 4.
It's getting worse, it seems
like. It's getting worse. It literally, oh my, I just, yeah, I'm done. I don't want to talk about this anymore.
Okay, a few questions. How was Wong? Because I haven't seen the latest episode.
Wong is... I don't love Wong. Everybody jokes about Wong is the best thing about the MCU, and I'm like, I don't care.
I like Wong a lot, but only because I feel like he's a meme.
Yeah.
And especially in Doctor Strange 2, he was very, like, overly expressive, and he would, like, have big reactions.
Yeah, you'll like him in this latest episode.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. And I think... We were talking earlier about, like, She-Hulk at one point looks at the camera and says, like, this show's about me.
Yeah.
But there's also a lot of cameos, and you were the one who told me about this, because I haven't seen this episode yet. But it does kind of, does it, to you, your opinion, do you feel like it's a cameo show?
It is. It does not feel like a show about She-Hulk.
Okay. Gotcha. Because it starts out with... It being like, it could have been called Hulk and She-Hulk.
Yeah, that would have been great. Or the Hulks or something.
The Hulks. I guess
they're going to do like the Marvels, so maybe that's crossing in there, but whatever.
Yeah. Also, She-Hulk, is that a good name or not a good name?
Well, they joke about this in the show.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, and they're like, oh, like, I saw a thing that was joking about, like, oh, them talking, it shows like how men are critiquing her, like, get your own name or whatever. Like, that's not very feminist. And it's like, this is a subtle nod to the fact that it's getting review bombed by men. It's similarly in real life. And it's like, no. It's just...
Well, then, my question is, where did the name Hulk come from originally?
Well, they gave it to the Hulk because he's a big old Hulk of meat.
Yeah, I know.
And then, they just didn't give her... In the comics, they just gave her She-Hulk.
Okay, but, like, in the movies with Edward Norton...
Oh, gotcha.
How did he get his name Hulk?
Probably... I forget. I haven't seen The Incredible Hulk in a long time. It's probably a newscaster is like, he's a Hulk or somebody.
I hate
that. It's probably... Like, that was in the day where they would have done, like, a quick quip about it.
Yeah.
And then they're like, ha-ha.
I guess he's now called the Hulk.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or, like, there was that one X-Men movie where... it was Jennifer Lawrence and her friend sitting in a room being like, we're going to call you Beast.
Yeah.
Or we're going to call me Phoenix.
I like that, but that seemed more realistic to me. I was like, that's what you would do in high school.
Yeah, in high school, yes. But then usually you like don't want your nickname from high school when you're 32. They should have called her like Bulk or something. Yeah. But that's hard. I feel bad for Marvel. It's like, okay, do you use the comics and just call her She-Hulk? Or do you come up with a new name and have to, like, focus group that name to where you're like, oh, it's a good name, but... The Green Menace.
Yeah. I'm over it.
Yeah, but even though you're over it, are you going to watch the rest of the show?
Yeah, because I want to be culturally relevant.
You want to see the memes?
It's like a train wreck. That's the thing. Yeah. And I'm so glad I did, because otherwise I would have missed this last mid-credit scene of her twerking with Megan Thee Stallion in her office. And it's like, that's just, you can't pass up on that cultural content.
Totally. And you're the one who told me to watch the mid-credit scene from episode 1.
Yeah, which that one is the best part of the show. They talk
Should we spoil it or no?
Well, let's say they talk about Captain America's virginity.
Yeah. Yes. You gotta go and watch episode 1's mid-credit scene. That is the best part of the show so far. Definitely. Cool. So we've talked about a lot of things. We were originally going to do a whole episode on Rogue One because we saw it in IMAX.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just a few days ago, really. What do you think? I wanted to talk to you about it because you really like it.
Mm-hmm.
And I am mixed on it.
I think that Rogue One, I think maybe I look at it more favorably now that there's been a lot of mediocre Star Wars content, it's felt like.
Yeah.
But you know, I think that it's a perfect standalone movie to me. It's for the, like, the within the greater narrative. That's a caveat.
A little asterisk.
It's a great, not trying to do its total own thing. It directly falls into the main saga. And there are characters that connect in a good amount of ways to the story. It gives you the right amount of fan service. The action and just the production of it, I think it looks and feels great.
Oh, visually, it's amazing.
And I think that it ends on a high note with the battle at the end being like the best part. So I think that makes me end favorably.
Mm-hmm.
But and I get people critique the different things about it and that you don't get involved with the characters as much or, you know, could have done a better job of that. There are a lot of characters that it draws you into. But for a standalone movie, I'm okay with that. And I love Rogue One overall. I think it's fantastic.
I think Rogue One is fun to watch. And visually, it's one of the best Star Wars movies. I really think so. I feel like the colors of, like, the opening shot are indicative of how you're going to be treated visually the rest of the movie. Because the opening shot is when Krennic is... I think that's the opening. I can't actually remember. Going over the ocean, and then you see all the green, and then you see the really black rock, and you see, like, the fact that Mads Mikkelsen's costume is just one of the best things ever, and everything's dewy and wet, and Mads Mikkelsen is so amazing. And so I feel like... what I commented on your review is how I feel, is how everything in this movie was just good enough to make me really want it to be that much better.
Mm.
Like, it wasn't like a bad movie per se, but I do not agree with you on the fan, what do you call it? The
fan service.
Fan service, yeah. I was going to say fan fiction, which is kind of what this movie is. But... good fan fiction, I'll say that. I feel like them bumping into the butt face guy and be like the guy who talked to Luke in A New Hope.
He gets his arm chopped off.
I do not need that. I do not love that. And like Darth Vader at the end is, I guess, cool, but sometimes it doesn't feel like it fits in narratively because it's a direct prequel to A New Hope. Sometimes I feel like the storytelling is a bit jumbled just because it's a huge cliffhanger. I don't know. And it's something about it just feels like, oh, you love AT-ATs, don't you? And it's like, yeah, I do. But how are they? And then sometimes in my brain, it gets a little nitpicky then because I'm not invested in the story as much. And I'm like, how are these X-Wings just, like, shooting the AT-STs? And that's, like, easy for them compared to in Empire Strikes Back. They have to, like, use cables and
stuff. Do you want me to talk about that?
Yeah, sure.
Well, one, it's snow speeders in that, so they don't have the firepower. Speeders,
but
and also, these are
different. They should put those guns on the snow speeders.
You can tell that they're different types of AT-ATs because these are more cargo. They have, like, the side doors and stuff. Yeah. They're not meant for specifically, like,
armored,
engaged direct assaults.
Yes.
So, you know, they're... See, these are the things, though, Isaac, that I love because they tie you, like... they bring a nice sense of concreteness to the universe. And it's fun to get new ships and new things. And we get a little bit of that in this. Like, the U-Wing, for example, that they use. Like, that wasn't something we saw before. And
who used the U-Wing?
That's the one that has, like, it drops off extra soldiers and that they fly around in that nice. Type of ship.
Yeah.
And
it, like, unfolds.
Yeah. And it's like, there are ways you can tie it into the Star Wars universe and make it feel like the same without just carrying over some of the same content, but also, like, realistically, you're going to see those same things if you're in a war with the Empire over years. You're going to see the same brand of walker over those years. And there are some maybe far-fetched ones, like running into the evil doctor and his butt-faced friend.
I hate those
But also, like, I'm not going to hate that. It's just like, that's fun. It's fun, and it's not overdone, I don't think. If they would have had a whole conversation and made them... I would rather have that than be like a character in half of the movie. like, you know, that, like, oh, look who stole your spaceship. It was these guys, you know? Like, yeah. A little bumping like that is the perfect amount. It's just a little seasoning on the movie, I think.
I just think there was a lot of fan service in this movie. And if they had taken some of that out, they could have fleshed out my favorite parts of this movie, which was, what's his name, Chirrut and his friend.
Yeah, Chirrut Inwe.
Chirrut, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, like, the blind Jedi without a lightsaber and his vacuum gun friend. I love those guys a lot, and I feel like they didn't get their due time in the movie. And that was sad to me. And I felt like I didn't connect as much as the movie wanted me to with her father, Jyn Erso, and whatever.
Galen.
I really like all these actors and characters, but I feel like I didn't get to connect with them as much as the movie wanted me to.
I think the solution to that would have just been taking them out, some of them.
Sure, take out some of them.
That's the best. Yeah. That's the best solution to
and
that.
Make more of them like fun.
Yeah, but also like then you get like a band of like, you know, there's a certain camaraderie in this band of characters element to it that then you miss out on. I think there's a trade-off if you were to take out, like, let's say, like, essentially, if you took out Chirrut, you took out Vacuum.
No, I want them in. Take out Andor.
Then you have no connection to the Rebellion.
No, make one of them part of the Rebellion.
Well, then it essentially changes their whole character.
Yeah, but there'd be more interesting than Cassian Andor.
But we don't get a spinoff show about more of it.
That's fine. I'd rather have a spinoff show about Chirrut. Give me Chirrut.
See, I just, yeah.
I don't know. I wanted it to be more of like a fun heist movie, and it was more of like a gritty war movie.
Yeah, and I'm okay with that.
I know. The one thing that really made me mad about this movie was they do, what's his name? Riz Ahmed. Riz Ahmed plays Bodhi.
Oh, yeah.
They do him so dirty when he has to get just molested by this big octopus.
Mind-reading octopus.
That made me absolutely hate Saw Gerrera.
Yeah, well, and that's, he's not supposed to be a lovable character.
I hate him.
If you watch the Clone Wars, and if you like look into some of this extended content, he's going to be in Andor, which will be interesting.
Yeah.
Like, and they talk about this in the movie, like, the Rebellion, they do some nasty things. Like, you see Andor shoot a guy kind of in cold blood.
Oh, that was cold.
And even then, that, like, they're like, cold. Oh, yeah, like, we don't mess with Saw, because he's, like, really bad.
he sucks, the
fact that they're able to do bad things, and they're still like, no, he's worse, like, shows how detestable of a guy he is in some ways.
I guess I kind of wanted, like, more, like, okay, so they have this line about, like, that's what rebellions are about.
Yeah, that's cringy. I'll
that's
that.
Very cringy. And I wanted to feel hopeful instead of, like, listen to somebody saying it's about hope. So I wanted the Rebellion to be less of, like, this gray, morally gray, like, oh, Saw Gerrera, like, he just, like, cuts off people's heads and, like, interrogates them with a big, stupid, fat octopus. And I wanted to root for people more, even though at the end I feel like I got a little bit of that with, like, the people going in. And I really like the Admiral Ackbar dude, so those were great.
Yeah, Admiral Radish.
I wanted more of the Radish man.
I think there's something to be said for, you know, there, when we first get that line about it being built on hope and stuff, and you can tell nobody, like, actually believes that. And even Andor, he says that with sarcasm, like, you know.
But that's taking place before this movie, right? Andor?
Yes. Andor's before it. Yeah. But what I'm saying is, in this movie, like, Cassian, even he's like, yeah, haha, rebellions are built on hope. There's cynicism there. Like, he does not believe that.
Yeah.
Like, these generals, they're deciding whether to attack or not. And they're like, no, we can't do it. And yet, you see, I think that there's something to say that this movie is a movie about the rebellion gaining some of its heart, actually, for the first time.
Interesting.
And I think that this is, it's not about from the beginning, that's what the through line is. It's them realizing and understanding that they do have hope, and that can be their propelling factor forward.
Okay.
The fact that everybody, after they launch an attack on Scarif, and everybody's like, oh, all right, let's do it, we're going to war. Like, that's when they're like, oh my gosh, like, it just takes that, they need to get that impetus, and they've got it going, and then they're like, yes, we will do it. And you see people die, and they sacrifice themselves, but they there's a difference to that of the grittiness of Cassian shooting a guy in cold blood in the beginning of what needs to be done. and then to see him, you know, give his life for this greater cause in the hope of that it's going to happen.
Yeah, and that's why it ends with gross-looking Leia saying, like, I hope.
Yeah, that's not good. I could do without that.
And that's another huge piece of fan service that I did not like.
That's true.
Grand Moff Tarkin and Leia.
We can take those out. I'll agree with you there.
They look bad.
They look bad.
But overall, some things I really liked about the movie, Ben Mendelsohn is awesome as Krennic.
Mm-hmm.
He's great. Incredible. He's so intense and believable. And I really like the ending, especially with like seeing an X-Wing hit that like blue shield and goes mm-hmm. That's amazing. That's really awesome. And I like that little guy who's like 2 feet tall who goes like he's like a lizard.
Oh, his fun character.
He's really great. So, anyway, what's your absolute favorite part of Rogue One?
I think that any part of the X-Wings is my favorite part. That's I think awesome. That they're done so well in this movie. It's so fun to watch the X-Wings. Whether they're doing the strike on Edu Station, like within the atmosphere, or they're in space, or they're down on the surface in Scarif getting through the shield, I think it's just beautiful.
That stuff is done really well. And a lot of people say that the director, Gareth Edwards, is really good at action and visuals. Not quite as good with character stuff. So, that's Rogue One.
It's Rogue One.
That's Rogue One for you. And then we've also, you know, maybe got a little bit of time for talking about maybe either Annihilation or Pirates of the Caribbean.
Well, so you bring up Annihilation because I saw that a few months ago now, and I do think it's broken its way into my favorite movies, you know, my top four.
Yeah.
But it has been a second, so I'd rather talk about Pirates of the Caribbean, which I just rewatched.
Pretty much Annihilation, really good movie. You should watch Annihilation. And watch it. Yeah. Let's talk about Pirates of the Caribbean.
So I recently rewatched the series of 5 movies.
Yes.
And you know that the 6th one is in they're in the process
of
producing it. Yes.
I'm surprised they didn't make it like a Peacock show.
Yeah.
That's what they've been doing, like National Treasure.
That makes sense.
No Nicolas Cage.
But yes, it is going to be another movie.
Wow.
So honestly, and it's hard to differentiate these nostalgic movies for us because we are the age that grew up on the first 3, which is it's a nice, cohesive, beautiful trilogy.
Yeah.
It's a through line, like 2 and 3, you were talking about how it was filmed back to back. You feel that. They fit together like some beautiful puzzle pieces.
Yeah.
And to have like Disney put out this trilogy that for, you know, other things that Disney's doing right now, it just feels like this series had integrity that our current Disney content does not. And I really appreciated going back and viewing that. It's weird. There are these mixed under... It's very dark at times for being, like, family-oriented movies.
And they made a ton of money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a little crazy. And, like, kind of some... Like, both the grotesqueness of some of the stuff and kind of, like... Yeah, they make, like, Bootstrap whip his own son and, like, these evil people.
Dang.
They're literally fighting the devil. Or, like, you know, the devil of the sea, Davy Jones.
Oh, okay.
And, like...
Cthulhu Man.
There's kind of, like, rapey vibes at different times. Like, it's not great. Like
heavy sexual undertones for a lot of that
stuff. For a family movie.
Yeah.
They really go off the rails with 4 and 5. 4 gets worse, notably.
I remember the nice memory I have of number 4 is I think I was in 8th grade. And I walked outside of school and me and my friend Andrew got picked up. And it was a sunny day and we got brought to the theater and to watch on Stranger Tides. And it was a fun theater experience, but super forgettable. But what are your thoughts on the movie?
What I critique this on is they bring back some of the cast. Will and Elizabeth are gone, which is Captain Jack Sparrow makes it what it is.
Yes.
And Barbossa, great character. Uh-huh. My favorite character from that trilogy.
Yeah.
But Will and Elizabeth, like, their love gives it heart and grounding.
They're totally.
They're the relatable characters.
Yes.
And you take them out of it, it loses all of its heart. They kind of have this other weird romance between a mermaid and this weird missionary guy.
The guy from Hunger Games 2? Finnick?
Is he? Oh my gosh.
He might have been, I think.
And then there's Blackbeard, and there's some cool stuff there. It also feels like every time it's like, oh, there's another ship that's crazy and even worse than it. It's like, oh, there's Black Pearl, Flying Dutchman, The Queen Anne's Revenge. Yeah. And then the fifth one, it's like, there's this undead ship that I don't even remember the name of. And it's
Jack Sparrow's being kooky again. Yeah.
So it definitely, there's nothing of merit in those last two.
Yeah.
It's just worse tastes of what the original was.
Yeah.
I will say the one thing that the fifth one then hits even worse depths. I gave it 1 star, and that is as best I can give it.
Yeah.
They do bring back Will and Elizabeth's son He's the main protagonist besides like Jack and Barbossa. And then I'm going to spoil this.
Do it.
I don't care. Because it's so bad. But then there's a girl that he kind of have a love interest with.
Jack Sparrow?
No, Will. Okay, Will's son. Sorry. Yeah, his name is also Will, I think. He passes on the name.
Will 2.
I can't decide. Will 3, because it's Bootstrap Bill.
Oh, no. William. Will the third.
So,
third Will. Third wheel.
This girl ends up being Barbossa's daughter.
Oh, no.
So that's already cringy. And then, but they do have
it's like Star Wars.
The first scene is Will and Elizabeth's son, and he's you can see he's obsessed with finding his dad. You see his room, and he's got all these like curses of the sea, and he wants to break his dad's curse. And he goes out, he rows out into the sea, grabs a rock, ties it around his leg, and he tries to bring himself down to drown himself. So then the Flying Dutchman comes and picks him up, and he meets with his dad. And they kinda do bring back Orlando Bloom.
Yeah.
And that, honestly, is the best part of the movie,
kinda
I think.
Kind of dope, yeah.
He does, they end up breaking the curse, and then Keira Knightley's in the last scene. They don't have any lines, but Will and Elizabeth run and hug and kiss, and it is nice.
Nice.
But it's like, wow, this movie is crazy.
Okay, question. I think I've seen online a de-aged Jack Sparrow. What's that all about?
He is, because there's a flashback for when the Black Pearl was actually the Wicked Wench still before it went down.
Okay.
It's when his captain is killed by this pirate hunter who's played by Javier Bardem. And Jack Sparrow then becomes captain on field, and he's able to lead them and trick them into sailing into this very bad rocky place where they end up being cursed and trapped and undead forever. So Javier Bardem's character has a vendetta against Jack Sparrow
makes sense.
So you do see that in a flashback as Javier Bardem narrates to Barbossa what that was.
Gotcha. And it connects. Well,
so definitely rewatch the first three. Great. So much fun. Wonderful movies. Don't bother with the last two unless you're like drunk or something.
Well, if you think the last two are so bad, how would you make 6 one that's not a bad one?
You need, if you want it, you need to bring back all the original cast.
Okay.
I think that that's the only way to do it. Or at least have effective
storytelling.
You need to commit. You need to commit to building those characters, because we fell in love with those characters, yes, in the first one, but overall, over all three of those.
Yeah.
And you need that.
Yeah.
It doesn't work. They didn't have it in the fourth one. They didn't have it in the fifth one because they just barely touched on it. Because they're like, Jack Sparrow is what it's all about. We love him. And it's like, no, that's not what makes... he's Michael to The Office, is Jack Sparrow to Pirates of the Caribbean. Yes. But it doesn't work if it's just Michael.
And also, Johnny Depp's life was very up and down in the fourth and fifth one.
Yeah.
So people say that in the fifth one, he's like phoning it in. Is that
I could see that
something
yeah.
that you feel
yeah
like he's in that safe that
well and that's where he you know he probably knows dragged. As an actor this is just a money making contract
totally
yeah
interesting
as opposed to the first three it was actually maybe more fun and and you have rapport with the characters who you've spent three movies with
probably so you would say your order is 1, 3, 2, 4, 5
Yeah, that's probably pretty good right there. Yeah. Yeah.
And how do you feel about, like, them balancing the supernatural with the, like, grounded elements? Like, you said that Barbossa is your favorite character, but he, like, comes back from the dead, right?
But the thing is, he comes back from the dead, but also, it's not like he's undead or can't die, you know? It's just like they kind of, like, brought him back and then he's just a normal person again and that's what I think you know that it makes it fine it's not too in your face.
How did he come back again?
Tia Dalma, who is Calypso, brought him back.
She become a big crab lady?
Yeah she does. And they kind of are like why can't you just bring back this person from the dead like you brought back Barbossa? And she's like yeah, I can't do that. Yeah, this doesn't make any sense, but whatever.
That's awesome. Well, I'm happy for you that it was a good experience.
It was fun. I enjoyed rewatching them all.
Are you looking forward to 6 or no?
No.
Yeah,
no.
Yeah, me neither. Not at all.
I'll watch it because I'm a completionist, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, is there anything else you want to talk to talk
about?
I
don't think so. I think we've covered up most of the stuff that...
A little teaser. We are going to do some Royksopp episodes. Maybe one, maybe two, maybe three episodes. And we are excited to do it. Royksopp has some really good albums they put out recently. So you should listen to those in preparation for our next episodes.
Love it.
Yeah. Give us a 5-star review.
Beefy.
Thank you for listening. And we appreciate it. See you next time.
Bye.